You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Heroes in Crisis number 1, Doomsday Clock number 7, Action Comics number 1003, Batgirl number 27, Justice League Dark number 3, Justice League Odyssey number 1, and The Terrifics number 8. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. First up for DC news, Batman artist Norm Breyfogle died on Monday, September 24th at the age of 58. He drew Batman comics for DC from 1987 to 1995, making a major impact on the character. He also co-created Prime for Malibu, Ultraverse, and he owned his own character, Metaphysique. Sad to see him passing. He was the artist that was on a lot of the Batman books during my prime Batman collecting when I was a teenager and college. So I have a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, I was definitely sad to see him go. I will admit, though, I didn't have the same connection that I think that you had, just because he was before my time in a sense. I mean, I was alive for a good stint of that run, but I was not. I was like six. So.
Collecting comics wasn't your focus, was it?
Yeah, no, it was not. And if I was reading a comic, it was not those. So or anything close to those. So yeah,
a lot of great.
But I have read some of the, you know, some of his stuff and some of the other stuff from that era, obviously, since then. And yeah, it's a 58's too young, man.
Yeah, it definitely is. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, the fifth and final season of Gotham is set to premiere March 15th, 2019. I'm just wondering, Cletus, is that enough time for me to catch up?
Probably. I mean, if you really sit down and binge watch Gotham, which sometimes I can do and sometimes I can't do.
I don't know. I just haven't been interested in binge watching it lately. I've been behind for quite a while.
I think I'm a half season behind. I think I finished the first half of last season, and it was, I mean, Gotham is off the rails to begin with. I think everybody kind of accepts that, but it was going pretty crazy. And I'm sure they pulled it around to like have it, you know, make sense and stuff. But there were some pretty interesting choices, to say the least. I'm curious to see how they finish with those. And I am curious to see this final season. It's Gotham is its own thing, and I'm glad they get at least one last season to kind of, in some way, finish telling the story they're trying to tell.
Who knows? Maybe if we get caught up, we can talk about the wrap up next summer at some point when we're not doing Arrowverse shows.
I can't. This happens every year. At some point I do get caught up on Gotham. And then I kind of stay up to date, and it's usually right around the mid-season finale is when I just lose track of the show. And it's happened like 3 years in running. I managed to stay somewhat caught up, at least caught it up enough to stay with the current five episodes on Hulu. And then at a certain point that I slip up, and I just miss the entire second half of the season.
All right, next up for DC News, Mary Elizabeth Winstead will be playing Huntress, and Jurnee Smollett-Bell will be playing Black Canary in the upcoming Birds of Prey movie. I know I butchered those names, but I think that's just expected out of me every week from this show.
I'm pretty curious about this movie. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this, the direction that they're going to go in. I know there were some rumors that maybe the Penguin would be the bad guy in this, which would be kind of interesting. So I'm just kind of curious what's this movie going to be exactly.
Apparently you forgot DC news from last week. We announced that Black Mask was going to be the villain of this movie.
Oh, that's right. Yep, I did forget. Penguin was a rumor at one point, in my defense.
Oh, okay. That makes sense for a Birds of Prey movie, huh?
It maybe it was too on the nose, I don't know.
But I am glad to see Huntress and Black Canary. Harley Quinn fitting into this, I don't know, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way because I guess I'm used to the classic Birds of Prey because it was Oracle, Huntress, and Black Canary. That was the Birds of Prey. So,
Yeah,
I
I
don't
get them
know.
not doing Oracle because I know, at least in theory, they're trying to do a Batgirl movie. Whether that actually gets made or not is, I think, highly questionable. But I'm a little bit surprised they went with the Birds of Prey and not in like the Gotham City Sirens direction and go with a Harley Quinn, Catwoman, Poison Ivy trio.
That would make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, Harley Quinn can definitely do the anti-hero thing. It's not that I think she can work with the Birds of Prey. I'm just a little bit surprised I feel like she just works better. She just pairs better as a character with Ivy and Catwoman.
It makes more sense for her character, I think.
Just the type of character that she is. I mean, she's just so inherently like not super serious, and I think to pair her with Huntress I don't
Yeah.
know. And then maybe that right there, that conflict is what makes the movie interesting. I don't know. That's why I say like I'm just really curious what they're trying to do with this, what it's gonna look like.
I think Warner Brothers is just thinking, Harley Quinn's popular. What should we do with her? Because we can't really have a movie on her own. I bet you that's what's going through their minds.
That, I mean, yeah, I agree, but are you sure you can't do Harley Quinn on her own? I mean, if you make it really comes down to if you make a good movie or not.
That is
Harley
true.
Quinn is popular enough to have a solo film. Let's be real. She is absolutely popular enough to carry a solo film.
That is
It's
true.
entirely on whether or not the film is any good.
I'd have to have a good script, and if they put, if they use a lot of characters from the Harley Quinn title, I think it could be really good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think she needs to have a team around her. It makes sense why you would do it, but if you're going to put a team to, in theory, I guess from a studio's perspective to help get more audience interest, why wouldn't you want to go with the Sirens? Like Catwoman and Ivy are more well known than Huntress and Black Canary.
Yeah, and we already know Harley and Ivy are really good friends.
So yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, again, it's not necessarily a complaint. It's just reasons as to why I'm just kind of curious to see what's going to happen with this film.
Yep. All right, and our next bit of DC news, the classic Vic Sage question will be returning in Action Comics number 1005, which we're talking about 1003 tonight, so we're only two issues away from this.
Yeah, I saw that news. I was pretty excited about it. It's not that the question hasn't been around. They had a sort of interesting take on the question. During the New 52, they had this Trinity of Sin, and it was him, the Phantom Stranger, and Pandora. And the idea itself was really intriguing, I thought, and it just felt like they never really totally capitalized on that idea. I know for a while the three of them had like a title. But that was just, I think, doomed from the start because trying to give those three an ongoing title, there's not an audience for that. Is as intriguing as it might be, and I think that story really just flamed out on them. It was meant to be, I think, one of the key core mysteries of the New 52, and nothing really ever came of it. So
So,
I'm glad to have them back. I'm assuming this will not have any connection to that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they pull something from the New 52 either.
I don't know much about that, so I
There
can't really
was
comment
it
on
was
it.
really interesting. So the Trinity of Sin was there was the implication that the three of them were all, I mean, like Pandora, we know traditionally her sin, so to speak, unleashing the box. But then there was the implication that's been hinted at before that the Phantom Stranger was Judas, and that was his crime that he needed to pay for. And then within the comic, it seemed to suggest that the question was somebody of historical significance, like potentially, I think Alexander the Great was the common theory in that, where like he was so obsessed with everybody knowing his name, which Alexander the Great was, planning like all of the cities named Alexandria, that his punishment was incensed to become the question. So like he's faceless, he's identity, he has no identity, and kind of questioning everything around him. So it was the idea behind it was really intriguing, and he just never totally, there was never totally a payoff for it.
I guess we'll find out in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC announced that the Titans show that's going to be on the DC streaming app is going to be also be on Netflix, but outside of the U.S., which makes sense because if they're only offering the DC app here, is it just the U.S. or is it U.S. and Canada?
I would assume it's Canada. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know for sure either, but I heard this and I was like, yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, why just confine that show to here?
Yeah.
One of the friends of the station, Robert McIntyre, posted on the Earth Station DCU Facebook page, and he was asking about our thoughts on the show being on Netflix, and I basically responded to him telling him that I had no problem with this. You know, if DC Warner Brothers are not going international with their DC streaming service, then having another outlet for fans around the world to enjoy the shows just made sense.
I agree. I think it makes sense. I also think it gives, at least in theory, international people less of a reason to pirate the show. I actually read a really kind of interesting article talking about piracy is actually up recently for in regards to downloading videos and TV shows and stuff, in part because of the increase in streaming services and exclusive videos. And so people are having less and less access to shows, and so that's pushing them towards just illegally watching them instead. So by making it available somewhere legally, at least gives people an opportunity to watch it without needing to go down that road. Obviously people will anyway, of course, but you know, it like just from that their standpoint, like you might as well, people are going to pirate it one way or the other, you might as well at least give an option so that they don't have to do that. They can watch it the way you want them to.
Exactly. And Netflix is a good platform. I think it's one of the most popular streaming services, so it makes sense for DC to have a contract with Netflix.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hello, questers. This is Mandy, the host of Caster Quest, inviting you to enjoy our podcast where we explore the rich and vibrant world of Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle, soon to be adapted as a major motion picture and television show produced by the award-winning creator of Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hungry for more content? Perhaps you will enjoy our recaps of HBO's Game of Thrones, Over the Garden Wall, animated Batman films, or our world-famous erotic fanfiction reads. Whatever you're in the mood for, if you love a good story, humor, impromptu parody songs, and thousands of pop culture references, you'll enjoy our show. You can find Caster Quest on SoundCloud, iTunes, and of course, our amazing network, the Earth Station One Network, at esopodcast.com.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers. For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Heroes in Crisis number one. I'm very curious to see what you thought of this one, Cletus. Me, I gave it the old thumbs up. Sanctuary is a place for superheroes so they can deal with their trauma. We saw Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman discover that something tragic had happened there and rush to investigate. When they go to investigate, they come across a bunch of dead bodies, including Wally West, which I thought was very strange, and Roy Harper.
That was surprising. Their bodies at the end was like, oh, wow. I definitely enjoyed it too. I gave it a thumbs up as well. I'm a little bit nervous about this though. I will admit, I very much enjoyed this issue. I thought it was well written. My concern as I finished the comic, part of me thought in the back of my head, is this going to be similar to Identity Crisis in the mid 2000s, which at the time, I believe, and people can correct me if I'm wrong on this, at the time was well received, and as time has gone on, it's been viewed kind of worse and worse. Like, it retroactively is kind of viewed lesser in people's eyes, just because of the impact it had on continuity at the time. And I'm almost wondering if this has the potential to do the same thing, where it's a good story, but its impact on the main DC universe maybe shades it in a more negative light than if you just read the story on its own. Like, for me personally, I have a few issues with Identity Crisis, but as a whole, I enjoy it as a story. However, as a part of what was the mid-2000s continuity, I hate what it did to a lot of different characters. And that's one of those weird kind of, I don't even know how you classify that, because, like, I enjoy it as a story, but I also don't enjoy what it did. And I'm worried that this has the potential to maybe do that. But I have no idea. I don't know if it's going to go there or not. So as of now, I really like it. But I will admit, my head went to Identity Crisis when I read this.
All right. Actually, I hadn't thought about that, honestly. But that does make sense. It's been a while since I've read Identity Crisis. And they were just talking about that recently on DC Daily. I was kind of interested in rereading the story because I've only read through it once and I don't remember all the details in it.
It's a comic that, honestly, I think if you read right now, you can read it disconnected from anything, because at this point it's effectively disconnected from continuity. And so you can read it as its own story. And I think it's better that way if you just read it as a self-contained DC story. I still have a couple issues with a couple of decisions that the comic makes, but as a whole, I quite enjoy the story. I don't want to spoil anything that happens there, but there are a few things that happen in that I really don't like. And nothing like that happened in this comic. I just want to clarify, like, there was no issue in this first comic of Heroes in Crisis that I had. It was just sort of that it reminded me as I was reading it. It felt like just reminiscent of that. And I was like, I wonder where's this is going to go. I really like what I'm reading right now, but I trust King. Like, that's the thing. My implicit trust of King makes me think that it's going to be fine. But honestly, if any other writer was writing this, I would be extremely nervous about its direction.
Maybe that's something we can take a look back at, Identity Crisis, at some point. We don't want to do it now because the CW shows are getting ready to start back up. But maybe we can take a look at that sometime during the next break or something. Give people a heads up so they can have time to read it if they haven't, or brush up on it. Maybe we can have some guests on to talk about it. The other thing I wanted to say before we moved on about this issue was the fact that at first it seemed like Harley Quinn might have been behind the murders, because we see her attack Booster Gold in the diner. Mm-hmm. But when we get to the end of the comic, she's claiming that Booster was the one that killed everybody in Sanctuary. And I was like, whoa. I was just curious what you thought about that. Your beloved Booster Gold.
I was not expecting that, but it sort of made sense. It was like, I was a little bit surprised, because if you just go straight up with Harley Quinn going on this murderous rampage, it doesn't really fit with what DC wants to do with her character. And so I can't believe, as good as Tom King is and as much free reign as he tends to have because he's so good, I can't imagine that DC would just let him just go full murder, you know, with Harley. That made sense to me. I was like, I kept waiting. I was like, there's got to be something with this, because I can't imagine that they're just going to have Harley go off the deep end as a villain. I honestly don't think that Booster did it either. I kind of felt like there was the suggestion that neither of them actually did it. Like, they're both going crazy. On some level, they're there because they're you know, mentally unstable. Booster from his traumatic event from Batman.
Yeah.
And Harley Quinn from a number of things. But so I don't know. To me, I interpreted it as, yes, the comic ends with you making it think that it's Booster, but I feel like Booster didn't do it either. And that's not because I'm a huge fan of Booster. I feel like there's something else going on in sort of both of them. The reason both of them saw the other one do it is because neither of them did that. That was how I interpreted the events. And I could absolutely be wrong about that, but that's just kind of what it seemed like to me.
Yeah. We're not going to have answers probably until next issue. So,
yeah,
I'm finding the story really intriguing anyways.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next title for this week. Doomsday Clock number 7. Finally.
It's been so long.
I know. And we learned a lot in this issue. Big old thumbs up.
Yeah, absolutely. A huge thumbs up. I mean, the art is so good. Frank is such a good artist to pair with John's. John's writing continues to be great. I love what they did with Ozymandias. I mean, he just continues to be just that, like, villain you just love to hate. He's a hateable villain.
Yes. I thought it was pretty cool that Bombastic, his cat, had the ability to track Dr. Manhattan. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes, I agree. And what I think my favorite thing with this comic is, what, at least for now, what we saw, a characterization of Dr. Manhattan. One of the things we've been talking about basically since the start of Rebirth is, why would Dr. Manhattan be the bad guy? Because that's never really been him. Like, he's maybe done stuff you could interpret as bad, but not necessarily he's never done it with malicious intent. And so it was sort of like, well, why would he just become a villain in the DC universe? And we can kind of see here with his characterization, he still felt like Dr. Manhattan. He did not feel like a bad guy. That was clearly Ozymandias. There's something else going on. There's just sort of that curiosity, that sort of detached curiosity that he has in Watchmen, and now as we see in this too. And I really liked that, because I just thought that worked way better than just a inexplicably evil Dr. Manhattan, which is not what they gave us.
Right. Now, I love them using, we got Alan Scott's history, we got the history of his lantern. And basically what Dr. Manhattan does, and I'm still not sure why he did it. They didn't explain it to the best of their ability. But we have Dr. Manhattan push the lantern out of Alan Scott's reach when he's in that train wreck. And thus he does not become Green Lantern. And thus the Justice Society of America never happens, changing DC history.
Yeah, it was a fascinating moment. And I'm really hoping for more of those, where we start to see things that he did, like just the small things that he did and why. I'm sure we're going to get explanations for why he did it. And I think one of the things that'll be interesting as we see this is that it really won't be evil. You know what I mean? I feel like it's just, again, it's going towards of just that sort of, what's going to happen? Like, what is leading up to this event? And I'm just really curious, like, as Dr. Manhattan, I'm curious what's going to happen to me. And it's just, I don't know. There's so much more interesting to me than just having him be a bad guy.
Right. Now, when Reggie, who's Rorschach, finds out that Ozymandias has been using him, and he says he's going to give up being Rorschach, do you think somebody else is going to pick up the mantle, or do you think Reggie's going to end up picking up the mantle again?
It totally made sense why he got rid of the mask, but at the same time, it was like, I feel like you kind of need to have Rorschach in this comic. And it just was like, well, if he's not going to stay as Rorschach, then why do it at all? I don't know. It's only six issues is enough for me to get his character, but not enough for me to be so invested that, you know what I mean? Like, it was an odd choice in that it made sense for his character, but then it was sort of like, well, if you're not going to have Rorschach for the rest of the comic, then what, like, why?
Yeah. I wasn't sure about that.
I don't know. So yeah, to answer your question, I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I just thought it was odd. It would make more sense if this was if he got rid of it in like issue 10 or issue 11, because then the comic's almost over.
Yeah.
But the comics is only halfway over. We're just going to get half of a comic with Reggie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Something, like I said, somebody is going to be picking up that mantle, I believe. I can't see them being done with Rorschach.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
The other thing we saw that was, it looked like Reggie was sending his story to Lois Lane. Did you get that? I mean, they didn't really show who sent that package.
That was the impression I got. I mean, yeah. I could be wrong about it. So
then at the end of the issue, the big thing was that we find out that Dr. Manhattan cannot see the future past 1 month. And it gave the indication, does Superman kill him, or does Dr. Manhattan do something to wipe out the whole DCU? Great cliffhanger, I thought.
Yeah.
Very curious to find out about that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Action Comics number 1003. I gave this the old thumbs up.
Yeah, I agree. The thing I thought was odd was Batman just letting the journalist off the hook. That felt unlike him.
Yeah.
Sort of just accepting her alibi. It was like, I think Batman's a little bit smarter than that.
Okay, one thing I had to say about that, one thing that felt weird about the Batman scene, how the hell did he get there so fast from Gotham City? I mean, Clark finds out about the kryptonite. She walks outside the building. There's Batman. Like, how did he get there so fast? Did the Flash run him there? No, because we see him in the Batplane. I don't know. I just thought it was odd, or it was a quirk that they didn't think about very clearly.
I don't know. I almost wondered if because when Clark had no time in which he could have communicated that it was in her purse, because the whole time he's upstairs
on the floor.
On the floor in distress. Sorry, I was trying to gather my thoughts. He was on the floor in distress. I almost wondered if he had like his Justice League comm link or the mental connection with John set up. That was what I kind of like. The minute that he starts to like faint from the kryptonite, Batman was already on his way.
You know what? That would make sense, but
because he says it's in his purse, but he only says that out loud. The only way Batman would gather that information, because Clark at no point has a free moment to go call Batman on his cell phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost felt like he was saying that out loud, like on either through John or through a comm link that telling Batman what was going on.
I'd been nice if Bendis would explain that a little better.
I agree. But I could be wrong. That was just sort of, I was like, this is probably what happened. I don't know though.
It, honestly, it doesn't take away from the story that much. I just found it odd. I love the fact that Batman showed up and just took it from her. And she was like the whole time wondering, how the heck did Batman find out?
Well, see now that I was a little bit surprised by, that she was surprised that Batman knew, because it felt like she knew why Clark fainted.
See,
but by the end of the comic, it seemed like she did not know, and it was sort of like, wow, you're kind of dumb.
Yeah, I thought maybe she knew too and figured out that she didn't know. So still,
it's somewhat unlikely that she wouldn't know. I guess it can be coincidence that Clark faints, sure. But then he faints, she leaves, and Batman immediately comes. And after that, she still doesn't put the pieces together. That was when it was like, wow, maybe journalism isn't your field.
Well, I don't think she is a journalist. Isn't she like a villain that's been planted there?
Yes, but I don't know. I still was under the impression that she was actually like, was a journalist as in addition to being some bad guy of some sort.
That could be. Anyways, we'll find out more coming up. last thing I wanted to talk about was Lex Luthor showing up at where Lois Lane was at. And I was kind of wondering what the heck that was about.
Yeah, I'm curious to find out too. I have to say I'm surprised at how like coy Bendis has been with the whole Lois Lane thing. It's a little odd. He keeps giving you just these tiny little breadcrumbs with it, which is fine. But also, like, it's kind of a big deal when people aren't sure that you're keeping the two of them together. I'm just saying.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batgirl number 27. I gave this another thumbs up. Barbara was bound and determined to stop Grotesque. I like the fact that she's accepted the fact that one day she may never walk again, and she's fine with that. On the other hand, we can see Jim Gordon was not.
Yeah.
And he was being very overprotective. So we see Barbara goes ahead and temporarily moves in with her dad. We find out that she had another, her new Batgirl costume was one she kept hidden at her dad's house, which was kind of cool because they indicated that she was going back to an earlier design she had come up with but never used.
Yeah, and that sort of made sense to explain its sort of older feel to it, like design-wise, kind of a more retro look. I thought that made sense. It did still feel a little, like, obvious, like, hey, guess what? We have a new costume change, and we have to have some dumb reason for it.
But
the explanation was pretty good.
Yeah, and I do like that costume.
I do. I have to say, I gave this a thumbs up as well. My only complaint was that the Sean Murphy's art is so good, and like on the cover and the design of the costume, that when you transition into the interior art, not that it's necessarily bad, but it's not his, and it's like, oh. You know what I mean? Like, you get that great cover. We've had the great looks at the design of her costume, and then you get the interiors, which, again, it's not necessarily bad, but it's very average in comparison. And it was just sort of like, oh, I knew it was going to be like this, but it's disappointing nonetheless.
Now, were you surprised to find out that the original Grotesque was dead? Because I wasn't expecting that at all. Barbara definitely wasn't expecting that.
I was not surprised. I'm not going to lie. It made way more sense that it was somebody different than just a sudden and dramatic change in MO and also intelligence, frankly. You know what I mean? Like, it made sense to me.
Oh, okay. I guess I wasn't just looking at it deep enough, I guess.
I don't know. They made such a big point about how, like, through this storyline, that Grotesque was acting out of character. And there was, like, some, there was various clues and hints and stuff. And I don't know. It just was like, yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of what I was thinking was going on.
Yeah. It made sense, but I wasn't expecting it. And maybe it's because, well, I know you hadn't either, but I didn't really have any experience with this character before the story arc, so.
Right, yeah, and I guess maybe that's why the death of the original one didn't really shock me, because I had no attachment to him whatsoever. I was like, yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, I didn't have any attachment to him either.
It makes total sense for you to do that, because as far as I'm concerned, he's a nobody, so yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Dark number 3. Another thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I agree. This is a thumbs up. It was such a, what a great three issue intro into this series. I like that it's short, because it really kind of, it's not asking you to commit long term to whether or not you're interested in this story or not. It just gives you a quick three issue story, like, hey, this is what this comic is going to be about. And I for one was a big fan. I really like the kind of dark, weird, creepy direction that the comic was going in.
Yeah, I did too. That upside down man was kind of weird.
Yes, he was.
But what I was really surprised about was the power that Wonder Woman was able to unleash. I'm really interested in exploring more of why that happened and what happened to Diane to give her that ability.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like about this comic is that Wonder Woman is the lead character in it, and it's rare to have multiple comics with Wonder Woman as the lead apart from her own. You know? So I like that this book is giving her an additional spotlight. In addition to giving all these other characters like Detective Chimp and potentially both Dr. Fates, which is cool. I really like what they're doing with this book right now.
Yeah, with the addition of Swamp Thing and Constantine, that's good too. And I'm hoping that we see more of them popping up during the series.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 1. I got to say, Cletus, even though I put this on our list, I went into this comic not expecting to like it. I'm not a fan of Cyborg. Never found Starfire that interesting as a character. I've kind of liked her with the Titans, but I haven't read a whole bunch of Teen Titans stuff to get to really know Starfire. So I haven't really been interested in her that much. I've not been a big fan of Azrael either. I've always seen him as a villain anti-hero because of the Nightfall series. And I just never been that interested in Azrael. So even though I put this book on to review, I was not expecting to like it. But I read it and I was like, wow. I like the fact that Darkseid is behind the hero's trek to the Ghost Sector. And he kind of gave them a compelling mystery to draw them there. I like the fact of that. And then the other thing I thought was interesting was the fact that Cyborg, Starfire, and Azrael were supposed to be these old gods. I found that really intriguing. And it makes sense why Darkseid would be there, because he'd be interested in finding out who these old gods were and how he could conquer them.
The look Darkseid has in this comic was throwing me off, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, who is this? Like, I know it's supposed to be Darkseid, but that's not Darkseid.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one that had a problem with that. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, this is not Darkseid. Give me my Jack Kirby version, please.
I gave this one, for me, this was a thumbs down, but it had the potential to be a better, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't necessarily enjoy this issue, but there's the potential for me to enjoy future issues of it. I don't know if that makes any sense. There was so much, for me, it was so much packed into this issue. It was just too much. I thought it was too much just explaining everything, setting everything up. It felt like they were trying to fit an entire first arc into one issue. And it was, I thought, overloaded. I thought it was too packed with stuff to tell a story that was, it was kind of hard to follow, which I don't think it should have been, because relatively, like, the events that happen are pretty clear. And yet I still kind of had a hard time occasionally, just because there was so much, like, dialogue and this is going on and this is going on because of this is happening and this is, and it's like, okay, but all you guys ultimately are doing is fighting a space battle right now. And then I thought the Elder Gods thing is an interesting idea, but also kind of dumb. It just, like, if that's the case, I can buy into that. Maybe they are these Elder Gods. How would they have never known this before now? In any of their trips to outer space, it never would have come up once that, hey, Cyborg, you look kind of like this dude that these people worship on this one planet.
But you got to remember, these are the planets that were taken off the board. They opened back up because of what happened on Kalu, or whatever the name of that planet is that Brainiac's from. So these worlds have been taken away. I'm very intrigued why they're old gods. I guess I'm finding the mystery intriguing.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, that's why I said, like, for me, with this issue, I didn't really like it, but I can see myself becoming intrigued in that story.
So I went in with such a low expectation that the story ended up exciting me more than I expected. So that's why I had to give it a thumbs up.
That's fair. I also had low expectations, and it about met that bar, which for me, I was like, that's not good enough to give a thumbs up. Not bad. Certainly not nearly as bad as other comics I've given a thumbs down to. But it's just ultimately, when I was looking back on these comics, I was like, I didn't really enjoy this one that much.
You know, if we weren't reviewing this for the podcast, I probably wouldn't have picked it up at all. But the fact that, you know, we probably should review this, and it had Jessica Cruz in it.
Yeah.
that's what drew me into it. So, all right, let's move on to our last title for this week, The Terrifics number 8. And of course, you know, Cletus and I both gave this the old thumbs down. Not. Definitely a thumbs up for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a enjoyable comic, and they do even more. They just keep finding really fun things to do with the comic. Like, this time we get traveling into different dimensions, and the art style changes to meet those different dimensions. So they're in, Plastic Man's in that super cartoony world.
Funny land.
it was just a great comic, and just a great use of the comics format. It was just, yeah, it was just really good stuff.
I love the fact we got Dr. Dredd, who basically looked like Daffy Duck. And we even got a bunny that was, I forget what his name was, something Strong. It was supposed to be a takeoff of Tom Strong. And I found that funny too. I was like, oh, we got us a Daffy Duck and a Bugs Bunny. That was hilarious. We had Metamorpho and Lena going to the Aztec Empire. That was interesting too.
That was such an intriguing world, I thought.
Yeah, it was. It was different. And then we had Constantine and Tom Strong. Not Constantine. Then we... Wrong comic. Then we had we had Mr. Terrific and Tom Strong going to Gotham City in the regular DC Universe, where they ended up in Slaughter Swamp, and of course Swamp Thing shows up. I love the fact they had the bat signal in the background.
Yeah. Has Swamp Thing ever shown up in a comic and not immediately attacked the characters that are in that book? I was thinking about it the other day, like, he cameos a lot, and it almost, like, I would say 9 times out of 10, if not more, that it starts with him attacking the heroes.
That's because he's grumpy and he attacks first and asks questions later. Maybe he just gets too many trespassers where they ain't so good guys, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah. But overall, another great comic. Love the Terrifics. One of my favorite series. All right. Well, that wraps up our comics talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have a surprise talk.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com. We all smoke down here, Georgie.
Cletus is wondering what the heck the surprise talk is about, doesn't he?
You got me there.
Now, I just wanted to briefly talk about DC Universe. Wondering if you've watching it at all since we last reviewed it.
I have. It's been great for my comic book club. I think last time I mentioned I used it for Young Justice. Just today, actually, I used it to watch Brave and the Bold with my club. And then one thing I've actually really enjoyed is the encyclopedia, because the club has just enough time to watch a couple episodes and then have a little bit of comics, other comic stuff. And I've been using the encyclopedia to pull up characters that we see in the shows and kind of be like, hey, like Blockbuster in Young Justice appears, and he's a totally different character in that. But there's like, he's his Dr. Desmond and that sort of. So I pulled up his his encyclopedia page on the site and kind of showed them that, and had some characters from this one. Owlman was in this one. So I've really enjoyed it just for that. And then of course I've been kind of watching a few. We mentioned it on the last podcast. I watched Gotham by Gaslight using it. It's been great. I mean, I'm very excited for new shows, shows I haven't watched before, but at the same time, I've definitely enjoyed the accessibility it's given me for some of these DC shows.
Yeah, it's just great. I've been watching some Super Friends. I've been watching DC Daily every day. Every day, you know, it's only on Monday through Friday, but I'll come home from work and I'll be like, DC Daily. So it's great for keeping up on DC news. I like the fact they have a panel about something every day, and I just find them intriguing, very interesting topics. So I've been loving it too, and I can't wait for the new shows to get on there. We got Titans coming up. I think next week sometime is when they debut. It's either next week or the week after. I can't remember. I get so much DC news now, I can't keep track of anything. I love the fact we got all that stuff at our fingertips. I wish I had more time to read some of the comics on there. But I'm so busy with just keeping up with what we need to do for this podcast that I haven't had a chance to read anything extra. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but I had, for my Read More Comics recommendation, I'm curious to have readers who have either read Identity Crisis or haven't check it out, either refresh your memory or check it out for the first time. And I'd be curious to get your guys' thoughts on it. Do you find, I know we're only one issue in, but do you find Heroes in Crisis to be reminiscent of it? And then just in regards to Identity Crisis, what are your thoughts on it? Is it a controversial book for you, or is it just a book that you enjoy with no qualms whatsoever? I know there are a lot of really strong opinions when it comes to that comic, and I'd love to hear some people's thoughts on it.
Yes, and like I mentioned earlier, we're gonna have to talk about that on a future episode. All right, and I'm going to do a shout-out. I want to thank Mike Gordon and Kevin Eldridge for coming on the show last week talking about Batman Gotham from Gaslight. And I want to thank them for also mentioning it on both of their shows. Yeah, I always enjoy when we have people come on the show. When you guys send us emails commenting on stuff, or like today when I saw the message from Robert McIntyre on the Earth Station DCU Facebook group, his question on there. I like that kind of feedback kind of stuff. And hopefully we have more of that in the future. Easy way to give us your comments is to call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can always email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we have Adventures of the Super Sons number 3, Batman number 56, Green Lanterns number 56, Justice League number 9, Nightwing number 50, Wonder Woman and the Justice League Dark, The Witching Hour number 1, and Wonder Woman Earth 1 Volume 2. I haven't read Volume 1, so it'll be interesting to see Volume 2 there.
The Grant Morrison one, right?
Yes.
Oh, I'm excited. I have read the first one. I think I've actually shouted out about it before on the podcast. I'm looking forward to it.
I think you've shouted out before about it too. So, I didn't know anything about this Wonder Woman, the Justice League Dark, the Witching Hour number 1. I kind of took a glance at it. It looked like it was going to give us more information on what's happening in Justice League Dark with Wonder Woman. So, I'm curious to see what's going on there. I hadn't heard anything about it, so I was surprised to see it on the schedule. Also, next week, Tuesday, October 9th, season premiere of The Flash at 8 p.m., and then we have the season premiere of Black Lightning at 9 p.m. We'll be talking about that. Very excited about that. So, CW shows are finally back.
I can't wait.
I know, I can't either. Oh, I almost forgot. Also coming out next week, Swamp Thing Halloween Horror Giant number 1, Walmart exclusive, coming out along with Superman Giant number 4, the Justice League Giant number 4. If you've been keeping up with those issues coming out at Walmart, I've been getting them all, and I'm excited about the Swamp Thing coming out. So it is coming out next week also. All right, well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.